Okay, good morning. Nice to see people on both spending their day. For those who are fortunate to be off today, engaged in Talmud Torah, it's really a special kavod. To invite a tremendous Talmud Chacham, but really a personal a friend and colleague, Rabbi Daniel Stein, Rabbi Terinikar Shtibel on the Upper West Side, Rosh Yeshiva in NYU, and really a Baal Halacha, Baal Machshava, somebody that I think we can really all have the opportunity to learn from. So, the kavod gadol.
Arguably, the most famous comment of the Ramban in his entire commentary on the whole Chumash is in this coming week's parasha, Parashas Bo, where the Ramban notes that we have so many mitzvahs that allude, that remind us of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and it's emphasized in so many of the things that we do, because through the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Anisim Agdolim HaMefursamim, Adam Moedo Anisim Minastarim, a person begins to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a constant presence in our lives and in the world, and he's constantly involved in everything that we have that's going on. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, Emunah, the Ribono Shel Olam, is something that surrounds us in many of the mitzvahs that we do, and is really the thrust of the entire message of Yetzias Mitzrayim, all the mitzvahs that we have commemorating Yetzias Mitzrayim. Most of the mitzvahs that we have are obligations that we are enjoined to perform, such as sitting in the sukkah, eating matzah, blowing shofar. They're actions that we have to do. However, we don't talk often enough, perhaps, about the fact that we have many mitzvahs that are not necessarily actions that we have to perform, but are really articles of faith, dogmas of faith, that we all have to subscribe to. And the Chavis HaLevavos, the Chavis HaLevavos makes this point quite convincingly, something that he thinks is a reasonable assumption, but almost makes it axiomatic, and that is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created everything in the world for a purpose. And each one of our limbs, therefore, has a role in the service of the Ribono Shel Olam. And what distinguishes human beings from the animal kingdom is our ability to think, to reason, to believe. So therefore, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us with all of these limbs, through which we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the Maisei HaMitzvahs, through the actions that we're obligated to perform, it stands to reason, and it's almost, we have no choice but to admit that the brain also, which has the ability to think and to reason, is also critical in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because we have certain articles of faith, certain dogmas, that we all have to subscribe to, what he calls the Chavos HaLevavos. We have the Chavos Eivarim, the mitzvahs that we have to do, but then we also have the Chavos HaLevavos. And if a person only has the Chavos Eivarim, he fulfills the mitzvahs, but he does not fulfill the Chavos HaLevavos, he doesn't subscribe to those things that every person or every Jew is obligated to believe in, so that undermines, that delegitimizes many of his Chavos Eivarim. The Ramban writes in his Hakdama, his Perush on Sefer Iyod, the Rabbi Chaim Wasserman has the same thing in the Kodesh Shiurim. He says it independently. I would suspect he didn't have access to the Ramban's commentary in Sefer Iyov. But the Ramban and Rabbi Chaim both give the same mashal. I mean, it's strikingly similar, that if a person, let's say, eats matzah, but he doesn't believe in what the matzah represents, he doesn't believe in all that that goes into it, he doesn't believe in the Ribono Shel Olam, so then his eating of matzah is also insignificant. If a person has the Chavos Eivarim without the Chavos HaLevavos, so that itself lacks a lot of significance and meaning, and really, it's as if he didn't even eat the matzah in the first place. So this is a basic notion. Other than the Chavos Eivarim, we have the Chavos HaLevavos, the things that every Jew, which we need to focus on more, every Jew is obligated to subscribe to and to believe in. And the first, at the top of that list, of course, is the mitzvah of Emunah, believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the first of the Seres HaDibros, Asher Hatzi Sikhom Eretz Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces us to him on our way out of Mitzrayim at the time of Kabbalah Satara. I'm the one who took you out of Mitzrayim. Why do we have to have, though, a mitzvah of Emunah? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu did create the world, but why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu make that known? Why do we have to have this struggle of faith, this leap of faith? Let it be obvious to all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world and move on from there. Why does it have to be, something that we have to believe in? Why does the mitzvah of Emunah have to exist in the first place? And the answer is obvious. It's a basic question. The answer is also quite basic. And that is because the Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world with the intention to give, to bestow goodness. Didn't need to, but he did so with the Ratzon to bestow goodness upon his creations. And he does so through the mechanism of, he chose to do so, through the mechanism of Schar V'Yonesh, of reward and punishment. But reward and punishment presupposes that we have a Bechira. We have the right to choose to do evil or to do good. And we get rewarded for doing good and we get punished for doing evil. But the whole system of Schar V'Yonesh, by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu justifies the creation of the world to do good, to bestow good upon us, presupposes that we have the ability to make choices. We have Bechira. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence would be known, would be felt constantly, it wouldn't require emuna, so we would have no ability even to choose. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't run the world in the way that he had designed with Schar V'Yonesh based on our Bechira. So in order to allow us to have Bechira, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to, so to speak, somewhat withdraw himself, dumpton himself from the world and allow us to have Bechira. But that required that emuna and HaKadosh Baruch Hu be something that is a matter of faith and not something that is something that we necessarily sense or we see with our eyes, and it has to be that way. Otherwise, we wouldn't have Bechira. In fact, Moshe Chochma has in his Hakdama to Sefer Shmos, fantastic parish in the Gemara Masech the Shabbos, comes in the Pasuk in Parashas Yisro, at the time of Kabbalah Satara, the Pasuk says, V'Yisiyatzvu, V'Tach the Sahar, Kali Yisrael stood at the base of the mountain. However, the real, the literal translation of the Pasuk would be, Kali Yisrael stood underneath the mountain, V'Tach the Sahar. So the Gemara comments, V'Lam Yishakaf Alem Har Kigigis, Kadosh Baruch Hu picked up the mountain over our head and gave us an ultimatum. If we accept the Torah, mutav, that's great. If we don't accept the Torah, Sham Teik Furaskam, will be buried right here. So that's the way the Gemara is understood. However, the Gemara continues that even though we were coerced, we accepted the Torah under duress initially at the time of Purim, right, the Apostle says, Kimu b'kibla Yehudim, the Jews fulfilled and they accepted. Usually you don't fulfill and then accept. Usually you accept. Your Makabel, and then your Makayim. Why is the Pasuk out of order? Kiyamu Masha Kiblu Kvar. They fulfilled that which they had already accepted. A Kabbalah Satar, they accepted to do it. At that time, it was under duress. It was coerced. Malam Shekhaf Alem Har Kigigis. He lifted the mountain up over our head and gave us an ultimatum. At the time of Purim, Kiyamu Kiblu, the Jews were Makayim. That which they already Makabel, but this time they did it Berotzen. However, the Meshach Chachma says that even though this is the way the Gemara formulates this notion, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu picked up a mountain over her head, that's probably not what it means. What it means is that at the time of Kabbalah Satara, there was such a great Gilui Shechina that it was so obvious the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we couldn't deny accepting the Torah. We literally had no choice. Our Bechira Kavshus was suspended because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was standing right in front of us. What are we supposed to do? Of course we had to accept the Torah. It wasn't until the days of Purim where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name isn't found throughout Megillah Esther, we have to kind of find the HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout the natural course of events. In life, then we accepted to do the mitzvahs barasa, and then we came to Amuna, on our own through a sense of belief. It wasn't forced upon us. So at the time of Kabbalah Satara, it was almost forced upon us. That's how we learned Pshat in the Pasuk also, the Meshach Chachman, is like, Dhamma Tishma, he learned Pshat in the Pasuk. At the end of Kabbalah Satara, the Pasuk says, Shuvu lachem la'alechem, go back to your tents. Because in preparation for Kabbalah Satara, Kadosh Baruch Hu had instructed Moshe Rabbeinu to tell them to separate from their wives. At the end of Kabbalah Satara, he told them, go home, Shuvu lachem la'alechem. However, the Meshach Chachma says, the Pshat is, though, Shuvu lachem la'alechem, go back to having Bechira. At the time of Kabbalah Satara, was Kafalim HaKikikis, we had no choice, only later on did we go back to having Bechira. Without having that belief of Emunah, we wouldn't really have Bechira. It can't be something that's entirely obvious. In fact, Yaakov Kamenetsky has, I think, on last week's Parsha, with the discussion of the Chatume Mitzrayim, the Egyptian magicians, who were able to replicate the first few Makis. So yes, how come we don't have these Chartumim anymore, magicians, or the Gemara discusses Shadim, or Dibuks, which is something that's part of our tradition, sort of. So why don't we have these things in our time, or why are they not as prevalent as it was in the time of the Chumash? And he explains, he quotes the Rambam, of course, says in the Perush of Mishnayos Masechta Zevar, we don't have Shadim, but the Gemara talks about it. There's sugyas and Masechta Brachos about these things. It doesn't mean we don't have it. So Yaakov says, no, what it means is they had it at one time, we don't have it any longer in our times. Why do we have it any longer in our times if they had it the previous generations? It explains that it's because when in previous generations, when they were functioning on a higher spiritual level, and how Kadosh Baruch Hu was, his presence was more obvious, it was more tangible, it was more felt. So then, in order to counterbalance that, Zehu Mosel Asa Lokim, there's always the tug of war between good and evil. between doing mitzvahs and doing averus. So when the propensity to do mitzvahs is so great because Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence is more felt or is more obvious, so we need on the to balance that out to allow us to have bechira. We need to have the kishuf, the chachum, the charm, the shadim, and the dibbiks and all of that. Nowadays, Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence, we have to go out and search for it. So we don't need the counterbalance of all of these things, and that's why we don't find them anymore. This principle, though, that in order to have bechira, Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence can't be felt, can't be obvious, because if it would be, you can't have bechira. So that's how some Rishonim actually learned shot of what happened in last week's parsha, what's coming up in this week's parsha. Kadosh Baruch Hu hardened Paro's heart. By Chazek Hashem is late Paro. The first five makas, Paro hardened his own heart. The last five makas, Kadosh Baruch Hu hardened it for him. The Rishonim struggle, the Rambam and other Rishonim, how could it be the theological conundrum? How could it be a Kadosh Baruch Hu removes someone's Bechira? Isn't that definitional to what it means to be a human being? Isn't that part of the rules, the ground rules under which a Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world? Is that we all have Bechira, that's the basis of Sar V'Yoyenish. And here, Paro is being punished for things that he really had no choice in. And the Rambam has his explanation. The Rambam says that it's because Bechira is a gift that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us. Person could sin so badly that Bechira will be taken away. However, the Ramban and the Sfarno suggest that this was not HaKadosh Baruch Hu removing Paro's Bechira, just the Makas had become so overwhelming at this point that Paro almost had no choice. He, unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu had intervened and hardened his heart for him, he would have had no choice but to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu because the Makas were so great at that point. So that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu, intervened and says, V'yechazek Hashem is like Paro, he hardened Paro's heart in order to serve as a counterbalance to all of the great Gilui Shechina that he was witnessing. That's why also at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, perhaps the Kedusha Arim suggests, that's why the post says, the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, Oz Yashir Moshe. Then Moshe will sing, when Moshe began in song. But the tense of the Pasuk is not in the past tense, it sounds probably in the present tense, but it sounds like it's in the future tense. Oz Yashir Moshe. So Rashi says, Oz means then. It was on the spur of the moment. It wasn't something that was planned beforehand. It was something that just happened. However, the Medrash comments, Oz Yashir Moshe is not only on the spur of the moment, Oz then, but Yashir means in the future, they'll sing. Ikan remez l'tchiyas ha-meisim in ha-Torah. This is where tchiyas ha-meisim is found in the Torah. But punt now, open the first mass. Right now, Kriyas Yamsuf, they're on the way out of the tribe. Now we need a remez l'tchiyas ha-meisim. Why does the dafka have to be right now? So Chedush HaRim explains. He says, because at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, there was a great Gilui Shechina. We started out by talking about the Ribbono Shel Olam in third person. Sus v'rach v'aroma v'yam. He took, we're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're saying he took the horses and the chariots and he threw them into the sea. We start off in third person, but then we transition in the middle of Oz Yashir into second person. It's Yimincha Hashem Nadir Yibakoyach. Ruach HaPecha Ner Mumayim. We're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in second person because we got to know Hashem through the experience of Kriyas Yamsuf. We saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It wasn't something we're talking about in abstract anymore. We see HaKadosh Baruch Hu interacting with him. So there's such a great Gilui Shechina. So then how could we believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Our Amunah would be suspended. There isn't any more room for Bechira. And yet the Pasuk says, V'yaminu v'Hashem v'Moshe Abdo. They believed in the Ribbono Shel Olam, Moshe Rabbeinu, his servant. What room is there for belief? V'yiru Ha'om Es Hashem. They saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If they saw Hashem directly, it was tangible right in front of them. How could it be? V'yaminu v'Hashem v'Moshe Abdo. So that's why Chedush HaRim says Chazal had to step in. And Chazal said, no, it must be Mikan Remez L'tchiyas Ha'meisim in HaTorah. There has to be something that's beyond, something that they can't really experience right now, that they can leave room for belief. And that was in the area of Tchiyas Ha'meisim. So that's why Emunah, even though, of course, it's such a critical principle, we have to believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam, but why does that have to be such a challenge? Why does that have to be something that we have to believe in? Why can't HaKadosh Baruch Hu make his presence known in the world? The answer is, of course, that it's because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would do so, our Bechira would be suspended. And even sometimes when we find the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam is so apparent, so obvious, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to step in sometimes and restore the equilibrium and to give us room for Emunah. This principle, though, this mitzvah, Schaivas HaLavavas of Emunah, the top of the list, the Rambam counts it in the Sefer HaMitzvot as the first mitzvah. Based on the Gemara Masechta this Makkos, which comes in the Pasuk, Parashas Vayetzei Brocha, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, by Rasha Kilas Yaakov, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us in Torah, Torah is Gematria 611, because Moshe told us 611 mitzvahs, two mitzvahs, of course, mipi ha'gvura shamanum, we heard two for the record from the Ribbono Shel Olam, that of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and lo'yi elecha Elohim acher ma'ponai. The Rambam actually formulates the mitzvah of Emunah not only vis-a-vis Jews, vis-a-vis non-Jews as well. Because according to the Rambam, anybody who doesn't believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam already violates lo'yi elecha Elohim acher ma'ponai. Maybe he explains, it's like two sides of the same coin. If the mitzvah emunah is to believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam, if you don't believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam, you've already violated Lo'yi Elecha Elohim Hashem Elokecha. Meiri continues, he gives a little bit more teeth to it, he explains a little bit further. We perhaps can appreciate it, because anybody who's, an atheism is really something that's quite popular in our times, that anybody who doesn't believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam must believe in something else. They'll adopt a political philosophy or some cultural priority, but whatever it is, it could be wealth, it could be anything, but they always replace it with something else. Everyone has their avodah zarah. It's not just, homiletical when we say that. Everybody who is an atheist has certain principles which they hold near and dear, and they believe in, and they promote, and they lobby for, and that's what they serve, the way that we serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. So anybody who doesn't believe in a Kodesh Baruch Hu inevitably ends up replacing it with something else, and therefore inevitably he violates the Elohim Acherim HaPanai. That's why Rav Moshe writes in Igros Moshe that a guy is also obligated to believe in a Kodesh Baruch Hu and to daven. Because Moshe says if a person is based sir and he doesn't daven, what kind of belief do you have? So therefore Rav Moshe says he's also obligated to daven. Yeah, you want to hear something? Oh. So the Ramban, though, in his commentary in the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs, when he counts this as the first of the Torah Mitzvahs, of course, quotes from the Baal HaLachas Gedolos, the Ramban himself seems to agree. But he quotes from the Baal Lachas Gedolos, who asks, disagrees with the Rambam, that how can this possibly be the first mitzvah? And he really asks what is a paradox. If a person believes in the Ribbono Shel Olam already, there's no need for a mitzvah. And if a person doesn't believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so then a mitzvah will be irrelevant to him to believe. So belief is kind of a prerequisite to all the other mitzvahs. How can itself be a mitzvah? And that's why the Baal Lachas Gedolos believes that the two mitzvahs that we heard from the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Gemara said in Masechta Makkah, 611 we heard from Moshe Rabbeinu, two we heard directly from Kodesh Baruch Hu, are not Anochi Hashem Elokecha lo'yi elecha Elohim acher ma'ponai, the mitzvah of Emunah, the mitzvah of Avodah Zarah, it's two isurim of Avodah Zarah. Because within lo'yi elecha Elohim acher ma'ponai, there's also l'sasa l'chol peseh v'chol temunah. So Baal Lachas Gedolos claims there's two isurim of Avodah Zarah that we heard directly from the Ribbono Shel Olam. One is the issa to worship by the Zara, the other is the issa to make it. So not to make it and not to worship it. But the Baal Lachas Gedolos believes that the Emuna itself cannot possibly be a mitzvah because of that paradox. If a person believes in the Ribbono Shel Olam, there's no need for a mitzvah. If he doesn't believe in a mitzvah, a mitzvah will be irrelevant to him. And that kasha that the Baal Lachas Gedolos asks in the Rambam is troubling. How can the Rambam believe that the mitzvah of Emunah, that Emunah itself is a mitzvah, doesn't it seem to be a prerequisite to all of everything else that we do? And there's really two approaches to how to resolve the opinion of the Rambam, each one which I think contributes something to the discussion, ultimately to the real answer. But the first suggestion that's made by many Achronim is already alluded to in the language of the Rambam. See, the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs describes Emunah as l'ha'amin ha'elokus, to believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs is written in Arabic. This is a translation of the Arabic. Was this an accurate translation or not? The Prime Heller debates in his footnotes on the Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam. However, that's the way that it's typically translated as a mitzvah of l'ha'amin ha'elokus, to believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. However, the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, when he brings this mitzvah, the Rambam writes Yesodei HaSodeis V'amid HaChochmos, that the principle of all principles, the pillar of all wisdom, Leida Sheyeh Shem Matzei Rishon, is to know that there is a ultimate cause and creator, v'yediyas davar zeh mitzvah sasei, and the knowledge of this is itself the mitzvah sasei. So based on this, many mefarshim explain within the Rambam that the mitzvah of emunah is not just to believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That is what the Baal Halachas Gedolos accurately described as a prerequisite. If you don't believe, we can't speak about the enterprise, the institution of mitzvahs. However, the Rambam here believes is that the mitzvah of emunah demands more. The mitzvah of emunah demands that a person know that a Kadosh Baruch Hu exists. What that practically means is that a person engage in proofs in the exercise of validating that emunah through, rational arguments or theological, philosophical proofs. That exercise of validating one's emunah, of deepening one's emunah, really, is what the mitzvah of emunah is really all about. Yediyah, Davar Zeh, is a mitzvah sasser. How do you know that that's what's implied by Yediyah? The pasuk says in Parashas Noach, after Noach sends out his birds, Noach isn't sure if the waters of the Mabul have receded. So he sends out a bird, the dove, and the dove returns with Alizayas Tarf Bafila. So the pasuk says, at that point, Vayeda Noach, Yikalu Amayim. Noach knew that the waters had receded. So it sounds like the word Vayeda is not just he supposed, or even he believed. Yeda means is he knew through the exercise of, you know, proving it to himself. With the he probably should have realized it already before that. But it wasn't until it returned with the Alizai Starbafia, but Yeda, Noyach Yikolamim, that Noyach knew that the waters had receded. So it really means to prove it to oneself. And the Chavis HaLevavos here also steps in and makes like kind of like the, you know, the most basic of arguments. It's almost impossible to deny. And that is, he says, if we don't do this, so that if we don't deepen our emunah, if we just, you know, go with the kind of emunah pshuta, which we'll get to in a minute, you know, a person who's raised in a certain way and he continues down that path in life, so then we're no different than anybody else, you know, who is raised with a certain set of values and principles and beliefs and continues down that path in life as well. You know, what we usually refer to as the tinok shenishba. So we're raised as Jews, but we're no different, really, says the Chavis HaLevavos, than the tinok shenishba, because we haven't taken the time and the effort and the interest, you know, to invest that, you know, that in the effort of deepening, of proving our emunah to ourselves and making it that much more profound. So therefore, the Chavis HaLevavos, you know, almost demands, kind of the mitzvah of emunah demands, that we go beyond that, you know, the way the person was raised and discover the Ribbono Shel Olam almost on our own. The Panim Yiros, who was the grandfather of the Pisvei Tshuva, he often quotes him as Adoni Avi Zakeini, the Panim Yiros. So the Panim Yiros has in one of his tshuvas, a strange tshuva, but he really is asking on the language of tefillah. Why do we say, Avakei Avram, Avakei Yitzchak, Avakei Yaakov? In davening, we should really just say, Avakei Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It would be much more economical. Let's just conserve the Elokeis. We got it. Avakei Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, not Avakei Avram, Avakei Yitzchak, Avakei Yaakov. We do that, of course, based on the posting of Parashas Lech Lecha. Kadosh Baruch Hu promises Avram Avinu that the Eschol, the Gagado, the Gagado, Shemecha, the Hayei Bracha. So Eschol, the Gagado, is Avakei Avram. Vavarechacha, Elokei Yitzchak, Vagavu Shemecha, Elokei Yaakov, Ve'yei Bracha, B'chav Chaisman, Chaisman V'kulam, the end of the Bracha with Magen Avraham. But why do we do it in this fashion? With Elokei, 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 we could have done it, you know, with just the one. So the Panim Yiros explains, because each one of the Yavois deepened their Amun on the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's Ki'ilu, they discovered a Kadosh Baruch Hu all on their own. Avram Avinu really did it all on his own. He was okay, Avram. He was the God of Avraham, but then Yitzchak made a Kadosh Baruch Hu all his own. He didn't just suffice with what he were inherited from Avraham Avinu. He developed his own method of serving the Kadosh Baruch Hu, as well as Yaakov also. And in that way, they had a kinyan. Ki'ilu on the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Kadosh Baruch Hu became their personal, you know, mission in life, other than the fact that that was the way that they were raised. It's fantastic, though, we conclude Magen Avraham. Why do we conclude Magen Avraham? If each one discovered the Ribbono Shel Olam on his own. So Shimon Shkup has a fantastic ha'ara. I never saw it brought in his writings, but it's quoted in his name, that it's because Vasilavoi B'chach Heisman, at the end of you know, the Ikfas of the Mashiach, we'll be standing, we almost see this in our times. So there'll be a great population of people who will not have even what Yitzchak and Yaakov had, not just to have a little amunah they inherited from their parents and to deepen it. They'll be discovering a Kadosh Baruch Hu B'chinas Avraham Avinu, all on their own. B'chach Heisman, Chaisim Mekulan, we end off Magen Avraham, because that's the way the, you know, the Geulah will be precipitated is by individuals who are discovering Kadosh Baruch Hu all on their own. This was the process that anyone who discovers a Ger, you know, goes through the same process, the process of Avraham Avinu, discovering a Kadosh Baruch Hu on his own. In that sense, it's a certain kind of a little bit more profound, a little bit of a deeper, that experience is something that's a little bit more personal than someone, let's say, who's raised with that emunah. That's what the mitzvah emunah really demands of us, is even if we were raised with that emunah, Baruch Hashem, but to deepen that, to make it more profound, is what the mitzvah emunah is all about. Yediyah Davar Zeh. Yisroel was very proud of this. Yisroel discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu on his own. The Pasuk says, right, he hears about that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for Klal Yisroel. It says, Ati Adati Ki Gadol Hashem Mikoho Elohim. Now I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is greater than all the other gods. How would you know? How would he know? The answer is because he was. He was a priest. He was a priest, Kayin Midian. He was a priest in Midian to another religion. And then the Medrash says that he wasn't satisfied. So he did a tour of all the other religions of the world, investigating them, learning them, until he arrived at the fact that the Yiddishkeit was the only true religion. Now I know God is the greatest, you know, the Jewish God is the greatest God of all the gods. So he discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu on his own. However, the Pasuk describes him at the beginning of Parashas Yisro, Vayishma Yisro, Chaisen, Kayin, Midyan, Chaisen, Moshe. He was a priest in Midyan. Now, it's not nice, right? The guy was a priest to another religion. He then converted to Yiddishkeit. Why do we have to call him up, you know, Yamwe to the Aliyah, you know, priest, Kayin, Midyan, the Kayin, for the wrong kind of Kayin. So why would we, you know, why do we refer to him in this way, Kayin, Midyan? It's not nice. The Gemara says you're not supposed to remind Baal Tshuva of the Averis that he did in his past. So why are we reminding him here that he's a Kayin Midyan? So Sefer Sam Derech, Simchazitzel Brady, the Rosh Hashiva, one of the Rosh Hashiva, former Rosh Hashiva in Hebron, explains that it's because he was proud of it. He was a badge of honor for him that he investigated all the other religions. He was a priest of another religion, and yet he came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he believed that that was the proper thing. He went a little bit too far, though. Because the Medrash says that's why Moshe Rabbeinu didn't perform a bris milah on his first son, because when Yisroel allowed Moshe Rabbeinu to marry his daughter, the stipulation was that he not give a bris milah to his first son. He wanted him to endure that same path, to go through that same path of discovery that he went through. So he didn't want him to be biased in life, to give him a bris milah and put him on the right path. That's like, you know, starting at the top of the mountain, being born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He wanted him to discover the Rebbeinu Shel Olam on his own, the same path of discovery that Yisroel went through. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu says, he called him Gershom, Ki Omar, Ger Hayisi Beres Nachriyom. I called him Gershom, his oldest son, because he was a stranger in a foreign land. What's Ki Omar? Because I said, the Baal HaTurim claims that this is an allusion to that comment of the Medrash. Ki Omar, because I promised Yisroel that I wasn't going to give a bris milah to his son. So over here, he went too far. That's why that whole strange episode of Parashat Shmos, right? The monster swallows Moshe Rabbeinu up to the bris milah, and the other way up to the bris milah to indicate that he should have performed the bris milah on Gershom. So the Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz explains in the Sichas Musar that Yisro here made a mistake. Yes, it's great that he discovered the Rebbeinu Shlom in this profound way all on his own. It's a great path of discovery, but we should never try and impose that on the next generation. Every generation will have their own path of discovery. We don't have to, you know, create it for them. But that's really, according to the Rambam, it seems, one approach, is that the mitzvah of Amunah demands that we discover, you know, that we deepen our Amunah in the Rebbeinu Shlom, not to suffice with that which we inherited, but to try and make it a little bit more profound. Other Rishonim are critical of the Rambam. Sefer Kuzari, the Sefer Ikrim claim that the mitzvah of Emunah is not to engage in philosophical, theological proofs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Adarava. The mitzvah of Emunah is best expressed in a kind of Emunah Pshuta, and that which a person inherits from the previous generations. That's the highest form of Emunah. The Stipler makes the same point in a Sefer, a little Sefer he has called Chai Adam. He says, because the world of philosophy is always developing. So they have one proof, incontrovertible proof of existence of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, then some great philosopher will come and disprove it. So he said, if you make your Amunah dependent on proofs and, you know, philosophical arguments, then there will always be a counter-argument. By definition, there has to be. Otherwise, the Kaddish Baruch Hu could have run the world. There could be no Schar B'Yana. So there can never be, an infallible proof of the existence of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. So the very exercise itself lends itself to disappointment. So therefore, the Stipler claims it's a very dangerous thing to do, and a person should not involve himself in that at all. Rather, he should serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu simply. Beis HaLevi claims, as the Pasuk says in Parashas Lech Lecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Avraham Avinu, Esalech lefanai v'heyei samim. He should walk before me and be simple. So Beis HaLevi claims the meaning of simple, tam, has two different connotations. Right? It could mean complete, a whole, or it could mean like the tam, like the Leil HaSeder, who's described in Yerushalmi as a tippish, right? It's a simple son. So over here, Hesalech lefanai v'yeh samim, we usually interpret to mean to be complete after he performed the bris milah. However, the Beis HaLevi explains what it means is that a person should be simple in his following of the Ribbono Shel Olam. He shouldn't look to have a complicated, nuanced sense of emunah in the Ribbono Shel Olam, but to weave in a Kaddish Baruch Hu with a kind of emunah pshuta. That's the highest form of emunah. The Kuzari tries to prove this based on the pasuk itself that describes the mitzvah of emunah. I'm a Kaddish Baruch Hu who took you out of Mitzrayim. That's how Kaddish Baruch Hu introduces himself to us. So the Ibn Ezra Chumash quotes from the Kuzari, who asks, why does the Kaddish Baruch Hu introduce himself to us as one who took us out of Mitzrayim? What about the fact that it is, you know, Kaddish Baruch Hu, Shebarasi Shemai Varetz? I'm a Kaddish Baruch Hu who created the world. Now, the Mashal of a person would come into a Havdil, come into, you know, a career center. and he needs help with his resume. So half the part of the resume is figuring out what should be at the front, what's the best quality, what are they looking for. So, you know, Kilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu walk into the, you know, the job center. And so they say, well, what are your accomplishments? Well, you know, created the world. I took the Jews out of Egypt. So he probably would not put took the Jews out of Egypt above created the world. Created the world should have been his calling card. That should have been on, you know, on his on the top of his CV. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduce himself to us? So the Maral and the Gvuras Hashem has his own answer. The Maral says, because they're really one and the same. The Yetzias Mitzrayim itself was a further step in the creation plan. Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he didn't intend to create the world as we find it in Parashas Bereishis. The Ramban has this in the Hagdama to Sefer Shemayis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended to create the world and then to further that creation with the development of the Jewish people who would ultimately receive the Torah on Har Sinai and then would settle in the land of Eretz Yisrael. That is the end of the creation plan. Creation doesn't stop at the, you know, at the end of the Sheshem Ebrashis. It continues in all of these steps. That's why Sefer Shemos is really the sequel to Sefer Bereishis, because it's a further step in terms of the creation of the world. So that's why the Maral says, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, Ba'asara Mamoros, with 10 utterances, that's the Mishnah Masechet Nesavos, the fifth parak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, Ba'asara Mamoros. We also have Eser Makos in Mitzrayim. Why do they have to be 10? Because whenever you find the number 10, that's another landmark in the development of the creation of the world, following, ultimately reaching towards the goal HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in mind when he created the world. That's why there's also Eser Dibros. There's 10 Dibros we accepted in Maamar Sinai, because each one of these are punctuated by the number 10. The number 10 represents something that's complete, of course. However, it's a round number, but it also, the number 10 is significant because Baruch Hu created the world, Ba'asara Mamoros. He took Klai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, developed the nation of Am Yisrael, who would later receive the Torah and Har Sinai, all with Ted Makas, and then later, but that's the difference. Rabbi Shapiro calls in the Vilna Gaon, said, whenever you have this number 10, so it can usually be dissected or can be broken down into three primary causes of seven manifestations, the mashal. Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world by Sarah Mamaris, but also through the 10 spheros, the 10 ways in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu interacts within the world. But the 10 spheros, of course, have the three upper spheros, Chokhmah, Bina, Das. Then they have the seven lower spheros, of Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Yesod, Hod, and Malchus. So you have the three upper spheros, and you have the seven lower spheros. Because whenever you have the number 10, you could usually have the three primary causes, Chokhmah, Bina, Das, and then the seven manifestations, the seven things that come out of that. Or in the Eser Makos themselves. We have seven Makos on last week's parasha, Parshas Va'era. Three Makos on Parshas Bo. Why could they all appear in the same parasha? It's long, it's true. I mean, we always like to have these cliffhangers at the end of Parshas Mikes, as if we have to bring people back to shul with the drama that's in the parasha. But I don't know what we do in Tazria Mitzera or Yaakov Pekude, but over here we have, we stop in the middle, and we have the next three. The Baal Turim claims Parshas Bo'i is called Parshas Bo'i, Beis Aleph, Begamatria 3, because there's three Makas that appear in Parshas Bo'i, the other seven are Parshas Ve'era. So again, the 10 Makas are broken down into 3 and 7. Why? Because all of the Makas were targeted at the gods of the Egyptians. The first Maka is turning the Nile into blood, because they worshiped the Nile. That's when Paro, you know, went there every morning. They worshiped the Nile, so they turned it into blood. The frog was a fertility symbol. So the second Maka was the frogs. But the real, you know, deity of the Egyptians was the sun god. They worshipped Ra, who was known as the sun god. That's why Paro has Ra in his name. Wasn't evil. That was the god that they worshipped. So that was the top of the pyramid of their totem pole of gods, was the sun god. So the last three Makas are all directed towards the sun. The most obvious, of course, is Makas Bechiris, which takes place in the middle of the night. Kachatois Halayla, when the Egyptian gods had no power. Chayshach itself was darkness that blacked out the sun, and even Makas Arba, the locusts were so, you know, numerous that it blocked out the sun, the Pasuk says. Each time, blocking out the sun, challenging, you know, what was the primary god of the Egyptians. So again, you have these three primary Makas, that was the real purpose of everything, and then the seven manifestations of that, of the other seven Makas and Parshas Va'era, but they're broken up in this format too. Even the Aseres HaDibros also. The Aseres HaDibros, you have the first three of the Aseres HaDibros are directly our relationship with Hashem. Anochi Hashem Elokecha L'yeh Elecha, L'osis Hashem Hashem Elokecha L'ashav, not to take Hashem's name in vain. Believe in Hashem, Yisrael, not to take Hashem's name in vain. The other seven are Kaveres Avicha Ve'asimecha, Shabbos, not directly related to our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, in that intimate sense, but more manifestations of that relationship. Shabbos, Kippur Aviyeh, Mesirsa, Mesinov, of the Mrs. Ben Adam Chaver. So you have, again, this same system. Even in Eretz Yisrael, again, the creation plan was there should be a nation of Klal Yisrael. They should later accept the Torah, and they should enter into Eretz Yisrael. So even in Eretz Yisrael also, the Pasuk in Parashas Ekev uses 10 descriptions of Eretz Yisrael. It's Eretz, Nachal, Emaim, Ayonos, and Sohaimais. It's a land with three sources of water, with fountains, depths, brooks. And then it's Eretz Chito, Sairah, Geffen, Te'ena, Verima, and Eretz Yishem, and Utvash. And then you have the Shiva Minim, Shnishtav, Kabem, Eretz Yisrael. The seven, you know, fruits that grow in Eretz Yisrael. But they're sustained. What brings all the water to them? The three sources of Mayim. Eretz, Nachal, Emaim, Ayonos, and Sohaimais. So Eretz Yisrael also has 10 descriptions. Again, this same framework. They add also that not only is Eretz Yisrael, of course, the land of Eretz Yisrael, but we access the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael every year through sitting in the Sukkah. The Sukkah is a kind of a recreation of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. The only two mitzvahs you fulfill with your entire body, with your boots on, not like the mikvah, is Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael and sitting in the Sukkah. Because the two are connected with one another. So in the Sukkah too, or in the mitzvah of Sukkahs, and the Yantav of Sukkahs, we also have 10 Cheftei mitzvah. We have the three walls of the sukkah, and then you have the seven minim that we take. It's really four minim we call it, but there's seven of them. You have one esrog, one lulav, three adasim, and two aravas. So that's seven. So we have the sukkah, which is the, you know, the reason we have the yontif in the first place, and that's manifested in the seven minim that we hold. Even Kaisel themselves are described the parashas Nitzavim in 10 different ways. The Torah describes, it says, Rasheichem, Shivteichem, Zikneichem. You have the three groups of leaders. And then Shadrechem calls Yisrael, Gerechem, not Neshechem, Tapchem, Gerechem, Chatei Beitzecha, Shrei Meimecha. You have the seven, you know, demographics beneath them between the three groups of leaders. So every time you have the number 10, it connotes another step in the creation of the world, even the Beis HaMikdash itself. And then subsequent describing the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, we commemorate a set of 10. We have the Shalosh to Purnaisa, the 3 weeks that we mourn destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and then the Shiva, Dinachemta, the 7 weeks. And we have a nechama for that destruction. So the three primary causes and the seven manifestations. Every time you have the number 10, connotes another point along this timeline of the creation of the world. So Kadosh Baruch Hu introduces himself to us, not surprisingly, as Anokhi Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzisichem Eretz Mitzrayim. Why not Asher Barasa Shemayim Va'aretz? Because they're really one and the same. And they're all points along the timeline of the creation of the world. However, the Ibn Ezra has his own suggestion. Ibn Ezra says, because the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world is beyond us. That's not something we can really relate to, and or we're meant to relate to. We're not supposed to sit and figure out and ponder the way that Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world. This is something you experienced, you can believe in, it's tangible to you. This could be the source of your amunah, it can be passed on from generation to generation at the Leil HaSeder. That is the source of our amunah, not through some philosophical thing that happened, you know, before we were created that we have a hard time relating to. So the Rambam, I believe the mitzvah of amunah is to engage in that, you know, process, intellectual process of deepening our understanding of what Emunah is all about. That's what the mitzvah of Emunah is. And other Rishonim might disagree. They don't believe that Emunah is a mitzvah per se. It's a prerequisite for everything that we do. But we really shouldn't even strive to engage in this kind of philosophical exercise of proving the existence of Kadosh Baruch Hu. It itself could be counterintuitive. I think that this might itself be machlekes the Rambam and the Ravim, strange machlekes. There's a different midrashim. When did Avraham Avinu discover the Ribbono Shel Olam? One midrash says he discovered the Ribbono Shel Olam at the age of 3. Because the pasuk says, Ekev, Asher Shema Avraham Bekoli. Before Avraham heard my name, Ekev, Gematria 172. How old was Avraham Avinu when he was born? When he died, he was 175. So there were 172 years that he discovered the Ribbono Shel Olam, which implies Ekev, Shema Avraham Bekoli, before he discovered me, was 3 years. Between 172 and 170. That's one medrash. The other Maamar Chazal says Avraham Avinu discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the age of 40. So Rambam writes in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, he discovered the Ribbono Shel Olam at the age of 40. And the Rambam disagrees. No, it was the age of 3. First of all, why did the Rambam feel the need to paskin in Maamar Chazal that he discovered the Ribbono Shel Olam at the age of 40? Why did the Rambam disagree that it was the age of 3? I think, again, what they're arguing about is this. The Rambam believes, you know, that the ideal of Emunah, Avraham Avinu reached his pinnacle at the age of 3. When he had a kind of emunah pshuta, the Ribbono Shel Olam of a child. The Rambam is not satisfied with that. The Rambam thinks, no, it has to be at the age of 40 when a person's das is miyusheves, when a person has a more mature sense of the world. He's experienced different things. He's thought about different things. So at the age of 40 is when a person really can come to a more profound sense of the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what the Rambam thinks that Avraham Avinu really discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the age of 40. Look, both of these are critical. It's important to have a certain sense of emunah pshuta to serve as an anchor in life, as a beginning point. It's critical also for a person to think about the different questions of life that he encounters along the way, to deepen and make his sense of emunah more profound. Different people trend towards different proportions within this relationship between the emunah pshuta and the kind of more nuanced sense of emunah. Every person has to find the balance between those two. The Maharal, though, has a different explanation of this Rambam, entirely different. Not in the intellectual sense, that a person is obligated to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu intellectually and to deepen in that sense, his intellectual commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but more in the experiential level. Maharal writes in the Vurus Hashem that what the mitzvah of Emunah demands of us, above and beyond the prerequisite to all of the mitzvahs, what Yediyas Devar Zeh really means, is not to prove it to ourselves like Noach proved to himself that the waters of the Maharal Mabel had receded by sending out the Dove. Yediyas Devar Zeh means it's something that we concentrate upon. It's something that we live with this sense of emunah. It's not just something we believe in our hearts or in our minds, but it's something that guides everything that we do. And that's what the word yediyah seems to mean. Earlier than Parshas Noach, already in Parshas Bereishis, the post says Adam yada eschava ishtai. He was intimate with his wife, but yada implies a certain sense of concentration. The person is focusing on something. It's not just something he knows over here. It's something that he knows, in all of his limbs, in the way that he conducts himself. And it seems to be that this is what the Torah prioritizes too, right? Avraham Avinu, before he appears on the scene in Parshas Lecha, somewhat abruptly, right? The Torah doesn't introduce him really to us. Chazal tell us something about his past, the Maisa in Ur Kasdim, when he had to express his emunah by being thrown, either worship the Avodah Zarah, be thrown into the Kibshan Ha'esh. And of course, he was thrown into the Kibshah. He chose to be thrown into Kibshah Ha'esh, and he was saved miraculously. But that doesn't appear anywhere in the Torah. And the Torah doesn't even mention it, feel the need to mention it before introducing us to Avraham Avinu. It's kind of just left go out from Sharaka, go to the land that which I showed you. So the Rishonim already is. Why didn't the Torah mention this, kind of the qualifications of Avraham Avinu for the job being sent to Eretz Israel prior to introducing him to us? Why doesn't it appear explicitly in the Torah? And it's not only that he had, this one incident. The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, he had tractates of 400 pages of Hilchos Avodah Zarah. He was a scholar in a Hilchos Avodah Zarah. Why is none of this mentioned? It's kind of like they picked Avraham Avinu out of nowhere to have this mission to go to Eretz Israel. So Moshe Shapiro explains that it's because, again, Beit Maral, that a Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't prioritize, the Torah doesn't prioritize, the fact that the person has a theological belief, a philosophical belief, even the fact that Avraham Avinu is willing to be Maisa Nefesh for that belief is not that significant. It's not, of course, it's significant, but it's not too significant in the way that a person who takes that belief and then translates into action of not willing to sacrifice himself for that belief, but to actually, take a pilgrimage to Eretz Israel, to run his life in his daily activities of day in, day out. That was the nisayon of traveling to Eretz Israel, the nisayon of, immigration. It's not a one-time thing. It's a constant nisayon every day. The fact that Avraham Avinu was willing to live with that kind of emunah itself was the greatness of Avraham Avinu. And that's where the Torah begins. The Gemara says in Makkos, of course, we have 613 mitzvahs, but different people try to distill it. Always people wanting to distill too many 613. So Habakkuk tried to distill all the mitzvahs into one central principle, right? Rabbi Kiva had a haftar reyasha kamosha. So Habakkuk has one guiding principle of all the mitzvahs of the Torah. It's tzadik b'emunasa yichya. And the tzadik lives with his emunah. The entire Torah can be boiled down to Amunah. So the Ben Yoyodo, that Gemara, Mesechus Makkos, fantastic Gematria. He says, Tzadik is Gematria 204. Amunah is 102. So he says, because Tzadik be Amunas or Yechya. He has two Amunas. Be Amunas. So the Tzadik is a composition of two Amunas. One, the convergence of the two. One is a theological, philosophical, theoretical belief in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the other, is putting it into practice. And that's where Avraham Avinu, is introduced to us, not when he theoretically discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he begins to live his life with that principle. And not everyone who has, and that's what the mitzvah of Emunah demands, Yediyas Devar Zeh, it's not just to know Hashem exists, even with nuance, books, and proofs. It's to actually live day in, day out, interactions with others, and professional interactions, personal interactions, to live with that sense of Emunah, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is what the mitzvah of Emunah really demands. Not just to think about it, to know it. That's a prerequisite to everything. That's what the Baha'i argued. Mitzvah of Emunah is the ideas that resists living with that kind of sense of Emunah. And not everyone who has one, you know, has the other. Right? The post says by Noach, Teva mipnei mei ha-mabul. Noach entered into the Teva because of the waters of the Mabul. So Rashi asks, why do you have to get pushed in? It sounds like he got pushed in because of the waters of the Mabul. So Rashi explains, because he was a Mamon v'eino Mamon. He believed, but he didn't believe. He was spending 400 years building a boat, but he believed, but he didn't believe. So when it came time, he had to get pushed in by the waters of the Mabul. What does it mean he believed and he didn't believe? He was kind of on the fence about it. He spent 400 years being ridiculed, building this thing, and now all of a sudden he didn't believe when it came time to come in. I think the pshat of Rashi is, no, he believed, in theory. When it came time to putting it into mind, so that's a separate kind of emunah. There's one emunah, right, that a person has in his mind, you know, theological, and then he's putting it into practice. They say over this joke, I don't know, I think it's remarkable. But there was once a child psychologist who preached patience for children, and shows the positive reinforcement, and he was paving outside of his house the sidewalk. Too expensive. And kids came running by, and they trampled in his fresh cement. And he went out of the house screaming at them, cursing at them. So his wife, when he came back into the house, was like, what? You were screaming at them? What happened to positive reinforcement? Why don't you sit down with them, identify with them, you know, validate them? What is this all about? So he said, no, I love children in the abstract, but not in the concrete. It's a funny joke. But many of us, we once had, and I once spoke about this in the shul, and we have different people visiting for different reasons. Sometimes they're in the United Nations, whatever. People find that it's an easy place to stay in New York, so sometimes they visit the shul. So we had once, I think it was Rafi Eitan, who was a prominent general in Eretz Israel, later a member of Knesset. So I was talking about this. So he says to me, he says, you only have one, you don't have the other. He says, look at all these Jews, and you're stuck here in Chutz Laaretz. So you believe in theory in Eretz Israel. You don't believe in practice, otherwise you would have come already. I'll take the Muslim from Rafi Eitan, all right. So we all have a certain element of this, and that we believe certain things. It's somewhat harder to put it into practice. And we'll conclude, the Pasuk says in Parashas Lech Lecha, Amar Avinu says to Ribbono Shel Olam, Vayomer Adoshem Elokim. Use the word Adoshem, not the Shem Havaya, but the Shem Adnos. How do I know that I'll inherit Eretz Israel? So the Gemara comments himself, this bracha said, Amram Avinu was the first one to call Kadosh Baruch Hu Adoin. Adoshem Elokim, the first one was Amram Avinu. This means he was the first one to call Hashem Adoin. And what's the greatness of calling Hashem Adoin, my master? So Shimon Schwab has a famous comment that he once delivered, I think, at a good convention. That there's what's the difference between Adoin and a Melech? It says, a Melech, a king, is someone who's a king over the entire world. Adoin means it's my personal master. So that's why we say in Adoin Olam, Adoin Olam Hashem Malach, but it was Azayu Loach, Shemayin Yekrela, Kadosh Baruch Hu began as the Malach, but then it's Behu Keli V'chai Goli. Then it comes my personal guide, right, and my personal redeemer. But what the Mitzvah of Emunah is about is not just having a Kadosh Baruch Hu be the Melech, right, be someone that's abstract, that's something that rules over all of us, but really something that we can relate to in a personal way, being Adoin, like Avraham Avinu, who employed it, who implemented it in everything in his life. When a person has that perspective, so then it's Behu Keli V'chai Goli, that can really redeem a person and help a person get through many of the difficulties that we all encounter. All right. Yes, sir. Strange dynamic. Mm-hmm.